Do you struggle with the purchasing of flies because of price? Are you someone that would love to purchase all your flies for that next big trip, but you find that mini flies are a bit too expensive and above your pay grade? Today, Steve Smith is here to share how he sells his flies for $1.50 and how they are super high quality, affordable, and they are going to get the job done. This is the Wet Fly Swing Podcast, where we show you the best places to travel to for fly fishing, how to find the best resources and tools to prepare for that big trip, and what you can do to give back to the fish species we love. Hey, I'm Dave, host of the Wet Fly Swing Podcast. I've been fly fishing since I was a kid. I grew up around the fly shop and created one of the largest fly fishing podcasts in this country. I've also interviewed more of the greatest fly anglers than just about any show in the country. Today, Steve Smith is going to share his top-selling dry flies, nymphs, and stillwater patterns so you can plan a bit easier for that next trip. We get his go-to top three. We narrow him down to the top three go-to flies for anywhere. We talk about why he loves the Chernubby, and that's a go-to, and which terrestrial pattern, a super easy pattern to use, he recommends, but is also a must-have this season. Plus, like I said, we're going to find out how they do it. $1.50 high-quality flies. And they actually even have some better deals than that if you buy a few more. So here we go. Another big one with Steve Smith from smittysflybox.com. How you doing, Steve?
I'm doing great. Thanks, Dave, for having me again.
Yeah. This is going to be a fun one. I think we're always interested in flies. You know, last night we did one of our live events with Togan's, you know, Togan's Fly Shop. They've changed over. They've had a lot of changes. They were up in Canada. They moved over. Now they're down in Colorado. But we did a live event for the giveaway for the big trip we just did up to the Euro Clinic. And man, it was great. We had a bunch of people. We had thousands of comments and we kind of had a lot of fun with, we talked flies and everything. So I think today, you know, we're going to do the same thing. We're going to talk flies, maybe give people a little incentive to, you know, figure out why, you know, they might want to head over and check out some of your stuff and maybe just give them some value on what we have going here. So let's start off the top. So the last episode was a few months back. What's been new for you? I know we've been through the holidays. Anything big, either new or coming up here this year?
Yeah, we're just excited to get fishing season rolling here in a few months. We've had kind of a mild winter here in northern Utah, which has been kind of nice. So we've been doing a lot more winter fishing this winter in the last couple months, which has been kind of unusual. You know, last year we had about 10 feet of snow around here.
Wow.
So yeah, but so we're just excited, you know, to kind of get on the water again, and we've got some newer patterns coming out for 2024, and just ready to get going.
Perfect. And do you, what is your, are your winter fishing, is that more your stream fishing, right? Is that more than the stillwater stuff?
Yeah. So we have a couple tailwaters that are close by that we can still hit. A lot of midge fishing, you know, nymph fishing. If we can get a sunny day, which is a little warmer, we can fish, you know, zebra midges and things like that. So still fun.
Yeah, good. And what's your, and remind us again, what's your hometown? Where are you out of?
We're based out of Hiram, Utah, which is just right outside of Logan, Utah. Northern Utah, we're about 30 miles from the Idaho border.
Idaho border, perfect. And describe a little bit about, you know, again, we'll put a link in the show notes to that Founders episode we did with you a while back, but just give for new people here like a heads up on Smitty's Fly Box and Round Rocks, what it is that you do out there.
Yeah, so Round Rocks is our family business, fly business. We produce flies for fly shops and sporting goods stores. Started in 1993, so we're in our 30th year of doing this. And we supply a lot of all the Sportsman's Warehouse stores nationwide, a lot of fly shops and sporting goods stores as well. So that's the Round Rock side of things. We have, you know, 1,500 different flies that we produce, SKUs that we produce every year, and try to keep those bins filled with good flies. So that's the Round Rocks thing. And then we also do Smitty's Fly Box, which is a monthly subscription box. And we'll send flies. Depending on where you're located, where you're fishing, we'll put together an assortment for you every month, along with accessories that go along with that. And then we also do two tying boxes, a beginner tying box and an intermediate tying box, where we choose a new pattern every month and show you how to tie it and put together a material kit that you can tie a bunch of that pattern. So It's been a fun ride and a fun thing to be a part of. Like I said, it's our family business. My dad started it. And so I've been involved ever since, 30 years.
Right. And the interesting thing, I think when we first started talking is the coach for Indiana, I think I always go back to that because of my basketball days. But how is he doing? I know he's still around, right? Coach Knight.
He actually passed away about two months ago.
Yeah,
it was time. He had a little dementia, so the last few years have been pretty tough. But yeah, he passed away, and that was a sad day and tough day for my dad, and because they go way back. But yeah, everyone wants to know about Coach Knight because he's such a fascinating figure. And if you know basketball or been a basketball fan, you're aware of Coach Knight. So
yeah, he was. I mean, I think probably one of the greatest basketball coaches of all time, as I would think, just on his history and Team USA, right, and like all that stuff.
I would agree.
Yeah. And the cool thing is for you, I mean, for you, your connection was your dad actually coached under him. So do you think with Bobby Knight, you know, I'll go down this tangent for a little bit, but, you know, because he was definitely a unique kind of a hard-nosed, you know, coach, I think. Did your dad take away a lot of that? Did he influence you on that end as far as your, like, work ethic and that all that?
Yeah, I think a lot of that. Coach Knight had a big influence on my dad and me as well. You know, that discipline, work ethic. But my dad was, you know, he has a different personality. And it's funny, if you read, there's a book out from 1986 called A Season on the Brink. And it's a famous sports book. And it's John Feinstein wrote this book. He spent a year with the Indiana Hoosiers, basically documenting and writing about the season. And so my dad was an assistant coach during that season. And his role really was, Coach Knight would go in and really, you know, get on a player, be really tough on a player. And then my dad would kind of come in behind and try to really talk the player through it and build him back up and kind of explain to him, hey, it's not how he's saying it, it's what he's saying. And so that was really my dad's role. So, but yeah, my dad's a tough guy, but he's definitely different than Coach Knight.
Right. Yeah, that is a great point. Yeah. So your dad was there actually helping to, two totally different personalities. He was the guy that was actually helping to kind of build them back up after Knight. I mean, obviously, I think Coach Knight was a smart guy, so he was telling them stuff they needed to know. But okay, so this book, Season on the Brink, I think that's a good one we'll put in the show notes because I think definitely we'll want to check that out. Good. Well, let's jump into a little bit here on flies. I think today we're going to talk about some of your best-selling flies. I think this is really interesting to me because you've got, like you said, 1,500 flies. You know, what are the ones? Like, we could all be guessing, you know, what are the top few patterns, but does that sound good to you? Do you want to jump in a few of these?
Yeah, we can talk fly for sure.
Okay. So let's just go in. I mean, you've got Round Rocks and you got Smitty's both. Let's just take it in general, kind of all over, you know, what do you think, you know, as far as, you know, those top flies, do you have a good, you know, of the top selling flies, what those are and which ones are coming up?
Yeah, we do. So, you know, we sell a lot of the classic patterns and they still sell very well. Take, for instance, a bead prince nymph. Everybody knows a bead head prince nymph. And that's still one of our top selling flies. Classic pattern, been around forever. So that would be in the top. And then, you know, honestly, I mentioned a zebra midge before. That's one of our top selling. And then we have a lot of our own patterns that we've come up with that are actually high up there too. There's a fly called a gunslinger that I started tying 20, 25 years ago. And that's been a real popular one, a top seller. And then we have a few newer ones in the last couple of years that have kind of come on. Again, there's one we call a Chernubby, and that's been in the last 2 years, that's been one of our top selling. And then, you know, Pertagones, the Euro nymph thing, pretty universal pattern, has really come on as well. So those are kind of a handful that come to my mind right off the top of my head. We could go through each one if you wanted to.
Yeah, those are five quick. And so on the flies, I mean, how does that work in the fly world? Because I think it's interesting. There's a lot of different flies, and sometimes there's people that tie them there. How does that work with, you know, example, the Paragon would be a good example. I'm not sure who invented that fly. My guess is that it's been out there a long time. But how does that work? And then, you know, as far as tying it, who can sell it? Is there a lot behind all of that, knowing about that whole process?
Yeah, and for us, you know, we'll sit down, like the process. I'll take the gunslinger as an example. So that was a fly Our family has been going to the Madison River for as long as I can remember. I mean, this goes back to my grandfather. Been kind of a family tradition. And so we do a trip every year. The Madison used to have an opening day the third weekend of May. Now it's open longer. They don't have that. You can fish it, now. But back then, that was kind of the trip we would go. We'd go the third weekend of May. And I would always sit down and tie a bunch of flies for that trip because I was always so excited to go up there. And that time of year, it's kind of runoff, pre-runoff. You get a little bit of off color. So it's mainly nymphing. So I was always tying all these different nymphs. And I created this fly. I wanted to come up with like a mashup of like a pheasant tail and a hare's ear. And I just tweaked it a little bit. And I put some crystal flash legs on it. And I took it on a trip up there, probably mid-90s, I want to say. And man, I just caught fish like crazy. And my cousins were like, geez, man, give me some of those flies you're using. And so I sat down and kept tying it. Well, we're in the fly business, and I thought this would be a good pattern. And you got to give it a name you got to name it. And so I was watching ESPN, and they were talking about NFL quarterbacks. And they were saying, oh, that guy's a real gunslinger. And I thought, well, there you go. So you give it a name, and then you start getting in it, putting it on store shelves and things like that. So that was a gunslinger. So that we started selling that one probably late 90s. So it's been around a while. And that's kind of the process, really, as simple as that. So
Yeah, and that one is kind of a mix between, like you said, it's like a little pheasant tail, a little hare's ear, kind of a little bead head sort of nymph. Like that's kind of what it. And then in the flash, you got a couple little. What's the flash used for the legs?
just crystal flash. Honestly, when I was tying that, I thought, man, I really need some legs on this thing. And I didn't, rubber legs, they're kind of stick out straight. And I had some crystal flash on my bench, and I thought, man, I can play around with these crystal flash might make good little nymph legs. And that's kind of how that came about.
There you go. And so crystal flash, and then how would you fish that fly? What's your typical technique there?
So that's just a standard nymph. You could fish it a few ways. So, for example, when I was fishing it on the Madison, we would fish the Big Pat's rubber leg stonefly nymph. And that's a weighted fly. So we would have a strike indicator down to that Pat's rubber leg. And then right off the bend of the hook, I just tie a piece of tippet and trail that gunslinger behind it. So that's how I fished that on the Madison for a number of years. You could fish it, like say on the Green River here in Utah. I'll fish it there as well. I'll tie really small ones, and I'll fish it more in as a drop shot. So I'll have a strike indicator, and then all the way down, I'll have two split shot on the bottom there, and then just up from that with a blood knot, I would have a little tag and a gunslinger, and I would go up a few feet and have another tag. So I'm in deep runs there, maybe a little bit of a mossy bottom, so I could fish it that way. I'll fish it as a dropper behind a dry fly, say a stimulator or something, and just drop it behind for some of the smaller rivers there. So I'll just fish it as just a regular old nymph, the same way I would fish a pheasant tail or a hare's ear.
That's it. And I love it. And the drop shot, the reason the drop shot kind of rig works really well is, like you said, why is that usually the better one versus, say, another type of nymphing? Is that just to get you down really quick down to the bottom?
Yeah, I like to use that rig. If the bottom is really mossy, if then it holds your flies up off the moss, and your split shot's kind of getting down in the moss, and your flies just coming up. So I like that situation there. Sometimes, like I said, there's deep runs that are really slow, like on the Utah's Green River. So I might be using 10, 11 feet of leader. And so I like that drop shot with a lot of weight that's going to take it right to the bottom, and then I come up with the tags and suspend those different water columns. So that's when I use the drop shot. Don't use it a ton, just in those situations, because they can tangle up and that. So
That's it, right? And then it is pheasant tail, the tail and the back half of the body, what is that, the abdomen, I guess.
yep. So the back half's just a pheasant tail. The front half's basically a hare's ear with some rubber legs. So You know, most flies are just combinations of other flies.
Yeah, they are. They are. No, and the little crystal flash is perfect too. It gets a little flash. What is the maybe give a little background on the fly. Like, I know you tie millions of flies. So what is the process of that fly getting that to where it's on somebody's fly box? Is that a lengthy process?
Well, we just have to, first of all, you know, refine the samples, refine how it's tied and make sure we have that all set, and then we'll source the materials. Mm-hmm. Then we'll send the materials over to our factory in Thailand, and, you know, we'll run it by, you know, with detailed instructions, lay out the production plan of how many we're going to make, and, you know, have a tire give us some samples back. And once we okay that and put it in full production, and they'll ship them back to us, and we'll warehouse them here in Utah and then distribute those to different customers and put them in fly bins, and then they'll get right to the fishermen.
Right, and that's it. So, and that's really the unique kind of world. Well, I mean, flies have been coming overseas for probably as long as anybody can remember. So this is nothing unique what you're doing, but you've been doing this a while, so you've got the whole infrastructure set up over there. Is it pretty when you send something over? I mean, do you make it over there ever now? Do you make a trip to kind of visit the factories?
No, I haven't been for a few years now. We have some pretty good systems in place, and we have a guy that lives there full time that manages the factory. And so there's with communication with Zoom and all of that, it makes it way easier. Back in the day when we first started, our first factory was in China, and my dad was living over there, and it was like fax machine. You know,
it was
like this little fax machine. These little notes would come through across to communicate. It was a lot tougher. So,
yeah. Gosh, that's great. No, and I hear you. I ask that because I mean, I kind of do a very similar thing. We have, you know, that actually right now this is being, you know, the editing here is my staff is in the Philippines. And I've got a team and they are amazing people. And it's just like, I've never been there, but I see them all the time. You know, I talk to them and we're, you know, just there's almost no difference. You know, they're in a different country across the world. That's the only difference. But the cool thing about the Philippines is they speak great English as well, right?
So
you don't have that thing. But no, I totally get it. I mean, this is all. I think it's really a great story because I mean, your dad started this thing right back in the day, and now you're kind of continuing the business. And I mean, when you look at that, like your dad versus now, your dad back in the day when he started versus now, do you see a lot of differences or do you guys feel like you're doing a lot of the same things?
I just think the tools, like you said, the technological tools that we have nowadays make it a lot easier. You know, I mean, as far as tying a fly, that's the same. It's all hand tied. It's a person and we've got to sit down and tie. And train them, and that hasn't really changed. And the quality control that we have to go through, and all of that—that's pretty much the same. But just the ability to communicate, like you said, and the world's getting smaller that way, and that makes life a lot easier.
Yeah. It's gotten easier for you guys. That's cool. Well, let's go to the. You mentioned the Chernobyl. I know the Chernobyl, I guess whatever Chernobyl, but you always hear that as a fly that for sure. Whether you're over in your neck of the woods, but that's just a popular pattern around the country. What is the Chernobyl? What's there?
All that is a small chubby.
Oh, okay. Yeah, small chubby.
So we just, you know, you mentioned, the popularity of the chubby Chernobyl because a lot of people are fishing dry droppers. They need a nice high floating dry fly, but an effective fly that you can fish in all the stonefly hatches and maybe the hopper hatches. So that's been popular, but you know, most of those are pretty big. So we started tying them really small, like size 14 A-Rex hooks. And we put on a little puff ball of yarn along the top. So it's a chubby Chernobyl, but it's just really small. And we just call it a Chernobyl, like a stubby chubby.
That right?
That's all that is really. It's nothing we invented or anything. It's just a variation of like a chubby Chernobyl.
But
it works really well. Like I said, for around here where we live in northern Utah, we're a lot of mountain streams. So dry dropper fishing is what we do a lot around here, and as most people do around the country too.
Yeah.
Just to suspend a nymph 2 feet under a dry fly. So you need a nice high floating dry fly. But this Chernobyl around here is kind of like or I'm sorry, the Chubby Chernobyl around here is kind of overkill for that. It's just too big. So I wanted a little tight yarn ball, and it basically is just a strike indicator. But, you know, in August and September, I have a lot of fish come smack that Chernubby too. So it's just a very easy fly to cast. It's, if you've ever used like those little yarn indicators, it works the same way. So it's a pleasure to cast, really easy to fish. It's still sensitive as a strike indicator, but I'll suspend a little jig tungsten nymphs underneath it or a gunslinger. And that setup works really well for a lot of these fast tumbly mountain streams.
Yeah, I gotcha. And the chubby is essentially just a big piece of foam tied on with rubber legs and a little, some yarn on top, right?
Yep. Yeah. What really, sets that one apart is the real thick yarn on top.
Yeah.
That you can really see.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. And what about on the stillwater? Do you do any stillwater fishing out there?
We do some still water fishing. We have a lot of places up here, southern Idaho. We're not far from Henry's Lake, which we fish multiple times a year.
Oh, cool. Cool, cool. This is good. So let's go down this path for a little bit because I think I might be heading to Henry's Lake for the first time to fish it. I know it can be pretty tough, right, at times. What is your advice, like if you had one pattern, or what's your tip there on Henry's?
Yeah, Henry's can kick your butt some days, and then other days it can be unbelievable, and you have a chance of catching a 10-pound trout.
Jeez.
And it's really effective to fish with flies. It's not a real deep lake. That's a tough one. It's you got to find them. It usually takes us a couple days when we go up there. It's like day one, we might really struggle. And we just keep moving around until we find them. That lake actually has lots of little springs up underneath. And there's little spots that we've marked over the years that we try. And really, we'll just trial and error. We really like a little brown crystal woolly bugger, honestly, like a size 10. That's been a good fly. My dad used to tie a fly, and we still sell it. It's called a beaver leech. And it's just a little leech dub, beaver dubbed leech. It's very basic. It's just brown with a little rabbit tail. And we fish that a lot over the years. And then we'll fish kind of like these little caddis nymphs as well, like these Henry's Lake Renegades.
Oh, yeah, Renegade. They're like is this like a peacock with brown hackle, like the Renegade style?
Yep. We'll do a lot of those. There's a fly called a mighty mouse that's it's along those lines. It's basically got a little pheasant tail out the back and some peacock body and some brown hackle. So most of these flies we're fishing are very simple, couple of materials.
And why is that? And why is the simple, something where, because I'm sure people are out there using all sorts of stuff. Is it just that?
Yeah.
What talk about that a little bit. These fish, I mean, they must have seen a lot of flies, but I guess that just shows you the old traditional stuff works just as well.
Yeah, for sure. I just think, just the food sources in there, the bugs that are in there that they're eating, the snails, small leeches, things like that. And they probably do get a little bit educated with the flies and stuff. So,
yeah.
But like last year, our best fly was just a little brown crystal bugger that had a little shimmer in it, casting and stripping with a sinking line or like a hover line.
The hover.
That's not going to drudge right in the bottom, but it'll kind of hover right up off the bottom.
This is great. Those are some good ones. Well, this is great. I love the Stillwater. We just got off. Phil Roy did a kind of webinar series recently. So I was sitting there, kind of there for hours. I think we did 6 hours of content. So I was getting a deep dive on Phil Roy. But I think his was, he keeps a little more general, just or at least for that presentation. But I mean, for you guys, how do you do that when you come to the Stillwater? You say you're picking your Stillwater flies. Is that a challenging thing? Because I'm guessing, if you're in New York on the East Coast, it might be a little bit different. How do you think about that? And as far as who your people are that are coming into your world,
So as far as if you were coming to Henry's Lake, how are you going to pick the flies?
Well, no, actually, this is a little bigger. Like if you were to thinking more people that are going to buy yourself, I guess Sportsman's is a place where they're seeing a lot of these flies, but even for Smitty's, let's just take Smitty's fly box. Somebody in here right now is listening. They might be on the East Coast or anywhere around the country or even world. How do you guys refine that where you're making a selection of flies that people, they're in some place maybe you haven't fished before? Is that a challenge, or do you think some of these flies you have are so good they kind of work all over the place?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think a lot of the classic patterns, they do work all over the place. You can't, if you're fishing a trout stream, generally a lot of the bugs in the trout stream, you have your mayflies, your caddisflies. Now from there, obviously it's going to change a little bit depending on the size of the river and where it's at and if it's a still water. We have a lot of experience selling flies across every state in the US. So if we're going to make a selection for someone and say in New York or we'll draw on some of that experience and some of that information that we gather from existing customers that are selling flies in that area. We don't always get it right, but we'll do our
Oh, right.
research as well. That's the nice thing about the internet, and
Yep.
you can do a
Yep.
lot of research and with fly shops and things and gather information to come up with a selection that's going to work for wherever. Like with Smitty's Fly Box, I'll get people that'll say, I live in Tennessee and I fish this river. Well, I've never fished that river, but we do sell a lot of flies in Tennessee, and so I'll start there, but I'll actually start researching that river to make a selection for that person. I've done that a lot to make
Yeah.
sure I get the right stuff. So with Smitty's Fly Box, we're not just going to blanket send, whatever. We'll
Right.
actually do our homework to try to get them the right stuff. So.
Yeah. That's great. No, and I think that's exactly what I would be thinking the same thing. If I was going to go somewhere, I'd call, somebody local who's there, a fly shop, a guide, somebody and be like, okay, what do I need? Just to get you started. And like you said, I'm looking at the Elk Hair Caddis now, and I think that's a top seller for you guys too. Elk Hair Caddis is my guess. If you get the right size and coloration, it probably works in every stream in the country, is my guess, right?
Yep, totally agree. Yep.
So good. Okay, so went down the Stillwater track a little bit, which is great. I think there's Stillwater is awesome. What about? I'm just kind of going through some of these flies now on the website here. The llama streamer, so the pink and white. So is this one? This is kind of a big juicy piece of meat. What is this kind of an Alaska fly or what? The
Yep.
llama. Yeah. What's
The
that one about?
Dalai Lama, that's a very popular Alaska fly.
Yeah, that's basically what that is. That's basically the kind of the Dalai Lama, which is just a like rabbit fur with a little bit of flash and some weight, right?
Yeah, and multiple colors. If you fish Alaska or the Pacific Northwest, you know about the Dalai Lama. Just a big rabbit. It's got a stinger hook out the back, targeting salmon and actually trout as well. So,
Yep,
yeah.
perfect. And so again, staying on going back to the Stillwater, I see now the balance leech. How about that? Have you guys, is that something you've got into quite a bit on that whole balance stuff?
Absolutely. That fly has really come on in the Stillwater and actually the river game in the last probably 5 years. We're expanding that selection in Round Rocks a lot just because of customer demand. The balance leech has got a tungsten bead. It's tied with a little extension out the front, so you actually tie your leader in the midsection of the fly so it hangs balanced. The idea is you're using like a strike indicator and straight leader, and that fly will kind of bob. And so you can use it in the still water where if you have a little riffle, a little wind, it'll sit there and bob in the water and cause that leech to just kind of bob. You're not actively stripping it or anything like that. So that's a popular fly. We fish that a lot actually around here. Pyramid Lake is, we'll do it out there as well. We make a trip out there.
How far is that from you guys? How far is Pyramid?
It's about 8 hour
Yeah,
drive.
it's a little ways.
We got to shoot across Nevada.
Yep.
But we make that trip once a year because,
Okay.
to catch those fish is unbelievable.
Right. Do you like the drive? Is the 8 hour drive to you? Is that something you really
Not my
enjoy?
favorite, I'll
Not your
be
favorite.
honest.
No,
No,
you're not good. You're not going to pop in a couple of the bunch of podcast episodes would be good for 8 hours.
we'll do. It's a great, it's a road trip with your fishing buddies. So you can't go wrong there, but no diss on Nevada, but that drive's a little rough as far as scenery and stuff. So,
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah, that's right. No, it's been a while for me. I haven't done that drive in a little bit. So, okay, well, let's keep going. We've got actually a number of flies. I mean, you gave us a bunch off the top, and we'll be putting links out to some of these. And so I'm actually on kind of Smitty's Fly Box now, kind of looking, and I'm just searching randomly. But yeah, I mean, the flies are definitely like for right here. I mean, the Quill Paragon, right? You got the Slim Jim. So now the Slim Jim, what is that? Is that a pretty hot fly, or what's that one about?
Yeah, so it's just along those Perdigone, along the lines. It's basically a zebra midge with, so it's got a real slim body along, with just thread and wire. So that's why we gave it the name Slim Jib, a little dubbing on the top. So that's that one. The Quill Perdigone is actually my favorite for a dropper these days. Last summer, I fished that thing so much. And I don't know what it is about that fly, but I did really well with that on with the Chernubby and a Quill Perdigone. That was my setup pretty much from June to September last year. And I fished that on the Green River in Utah. I fished it on the Frying Pan in Colorado. I'm trying to think of all the
No
trips.
kidding.
The
So just a
South.
dry dropper, so a big dry
Yeah.
with a dropper off the tag or off the
Yeah.
end.
The South Fork of the Snake, I fished
Yep.
that drifting down along the bank. I fished it right here in the Logan River. So
That's a good.
it's just, those Perdigones, people say, well, why do those things work? And honestly, if you would have showed me that fly 20 years ago, I would have been like, nah, you
Right.
know? And it's funny how flies have evolved that way. Really, they become more simple, it seems like. But the key to that fly is just the weight, the tungsten bead, and how it gets down right. So when you're fishing it as a dropper, it's going to get vertical below your dry. It's going to get down into the pockets where it needs to be. And it's going to, as a jig style, it's not going to get hung up on everything. And so I think that's the reason why it works. And it looks like, a little cased caddis or even like a midge larva or something like that. But I think that's why it works so well, is it just gets down in the right place and gets tight where it needs to be.
Yeah, that's the key. Yeah, I feel like the more you get into this, you've got the whole entomology and getting and matching the hatch and all that, but I feel like, probably even more of it is getting down in the zone. And, even if you don't have the perfect exact fly, it seems like just something close and the right size and color, right? And it just shows you because the Quill Paragon or even the Slim Jim, I mean, there's almost no material on that fly, right? It's just a tiny little, there's a tuft, there's a bead, there's a couple. I mean, that's like, I mean, in the water, these fish have great eyesight, so they can see exactly. So I think it tells you a lot. I think the advice for me, and I've done this, made the mistake with flies, is you make them too bulky, right? They're just too, and that just never is a good thing. I think the thing you do is you have some materials when you're tying, take off half of whatever you think you need and then tie. Do you feel like that's good advice when tying?
Absolutely. I see a lot of flies that are way overdressed.
Yeah.
And in our fly tying classes, we teach the Utah State fly tying classes. And
Oh, yeah.
yeah, common mistake, especially beginners, we'll tie, say, a gunslinger. We'll be tying a gunslinger. They'll put way too much dubbing on there.
Yeah, that's
And
it.
so it's gobbed up behind the bead. I see that a lot, just overdressed. Same thing with a lot of dry flies, too, maybe, overhackled. So it can be too much.
Yep, that's right. And that class, and is this part of the thing with the Smitties? You do some, I mean, you have your boxes that you send out, but do you also have some fly tying? If you had a new fly tie or even an intermediate person, do you guys do some education there at Smitties?
Yeah, so our YouTube channel, we do all the tutorials to tie all the flies. And so those are all up on our YouTube channel, Smitty's Fly Box. And you can also, if the thing with Smitty's Fly Box too, we understand not everyone wants to subscribe to a monthly box. So we offer some one-time boxes where you can just get a box of materials for certain patterns. And then we also sell a lot of just, loose materials, marabou and
Oh, okay.
hackle and stuff like that. So.
Right. So it's essentially, yeah, you've got a basically it's an online, I mean, fly tying shop. I mean, you got like anything you need is there as far as materials. Good. Okay. Well, let's go through a few more of these. I'm just looking at some more flies. Let's look at general categories. So I see the hopper. So what would be your if you had to pick one hopper? You got a bunch here. What's do you fish that a lot?
So I got two of them. I got the metal hopper is a simple little foam hopper. And then I like just a classic Dave's hopper.
Yeah,
If
Dave's.
I want to go natural. So the metal hoppers, the foam stuff, it's going to plop, it's going to twitch around. But I still can't go wrong with just a good old Dave's hopper. It has all natural materials. I like that one too. So those two are my go-to.
Okay, good. Yeah, and Dave's old classic, cool. And then what about on a kind of the other terrestrial stuff? I guess you got ants and beetles. What would be another good all-around terrestrial, maybe let's just say for a beetle?
I like just that Chernubby I was telling you before
Yeah.
in the black color. That's a good little beetle pattern. And then we just have a simple one we call just a foam beetle. Yeah.
Just foam. Just, I think I see it here. Yeah. It's just foam with a little bright spot on top. Is that kind of like indicator sort of thing?
Yep. Yeah. You know, that's such an underrated fly pattern too in the summer. Just a foam beetle. Quick story. If you've ever been up on Slough Creek in Yellowstone.
Oh yeah, I have. That's right. Slough Creek.
It's been a few years since I've been there.
We had an experience on Slough. Slough is the one that goes right through like the middle, right? Of a part of it, right through the big meadow. Yeah, we were on Slough Creek fishing. I actually had a really cool afternoon with the bison. Mm-hmm. You know, is it buffalo? No, it's with the buffalo, I guess, technically. Yeah. But man, what an amazing thing. Yeah, we were sitting out there like literally, you know, just they're hanging out. We were just hanging out with them, you know,
it was one of those pretty things, awesome.
But yeah, so anyway, shout out to that area. If you haven't been there, that's for sure. But yeah, but go ahead. Tell me that. Let's hear the story.
Just, you know, the cutthroats that are back in there. God, just a black foam beetle one. I just still have a memory of a trip back there. I was pretty young, if I remember, on this one. And yeah, black foam beetle. And it's funny how you have those trips and that never leaves you. You know, your brain doesn't forget that. So I still think about that. I was probably in a teenager that trip when I did really well with that black foam beetle. Yep. So every time I open my fly box, I still think about that. I'm like, oh, there's that black beetle and I probably ought to use that. I remember that on Slough Creek, you know?
Yeah, so. Just like it was yesterday, right? That memory, I know. That's cool. All right. So we got some beetles. I mean, I'm just looking through a few more of these. You got some nymphs. And what about dries? What is the good, some all around, you know, dry flies that you guys are selling that are pretty common?
Well, you mentioned the Elkhair caddis. That's probably one of our top selling. It's hard to beat that fly just the way it matches a caddis hatch, but also sits up there. You can see it very well. It's a perfect fly for beginners if they want to start.
How do you fish that do you fish a lot of dries or are you doing more nymphing? Are you fish, like if a hatch is coming off, say a caddis hatch, are you really getting focused on that?
Oh yeah. If there's fish rising and I see a lot of fish working, I'll definitely try to match the hatch and get in the game a little bit. You know, a caddis hatch, just a simple dry fly setup. I have a tapered leader right down to the caddis. Most of the time I'll fish tandems. So I might fish a little bit bigger caddis up front and then like a little caddis emerger or like a partridge caddis, something that's a little more smaller. Yeah, sits in the surface film and I'll work both of those and switch around. That bigger caddis might help me locate as maybe act as an indicator or a sight or two. So.
Gotcha. Okay. Nice. Yeah. I always wonder about that with the caddis hatch because I think that at times, especially in the evenings, you know, that can be really good. But I think there's a lot of struggle too with caddis. You know what I mean? A lot of not catching with that fly.
Yeah. When they really get keyed in on, say, the pupa or whatever, and they're working and fish are swirling everywhere and you can't catch them. Yeah, that's probably happened to a lot of us. I've had that happen a lot, like on the Henry's Fork, and it just drives you crazy. You know, but there might be so many bugs hatching at once. They don't care about your artificial one.
Right. Yeah. That's right. So nice. Right on. Well, any other patterns we want to throw out here in the mix that we haven't talked about? Maybe that if people are putting together a selection, they want to look at.
Yeah. So just maybe some unique ones. If you want just a summertime attractor fly for high mountain streams and lakes, we do a fly called a fatal attractor. And it's kind of like a royal wolf and a stimulator mashup. And I have to admit, it has a lot going on. So when I talked about simplified flies earlier, well, this one kind of breaks that rule.
Yeah, right.
But it's a fun fly. We fish it a lot. You say the Uinta Mountains here in Utah, a lot of brook trout and feisty summertime fish in those high mountain streams and lakes. This fly, they hammer it because it just looks crazy. So that's called a fatal attractor. You might want to check that one out.
Yep.
In the Euro nymph and the dropper section, like I mentioned, the quill pertagones and there's a fly called a B12 shot that we do that's been a good pattern. Chernubbies, gunslingers, those are all kind of unique to us.
Yeah, I'm looking at the fatal attractor, and it definitely looks. I mean, at least this coloration. I mean, you got an orange tail, flat, like I don't know what that is, a synthetic. You got the body's like bright green, it's kind of it's almost like a it's like a what do you call that style where the hackles on the front, kind of a wolf style?
It's a wolf style. So it's got the white calf tail for the wings, it's got grizzly hackle up front, and then we actually have an elk hair wing on the back. And then the body is iced up from hairline. It's a real bright shiny dubbing, and then out the back you got red crystal flash. So there's a lot going on there, but that's been a good summertime fly for us.
Well, and the cool thing is I'm looking at this, again, at smittysflybox.com. I mean, one thing that sticks out is the fact that it's only $1.50.
Yeah.
That seems to be something where when I think of flies, I think of like, well, $3, $4, and lots more, right? That seems like a pretty good price point. Is that something that is like one of your advantages here?
Yeah, I think so. We, you know, if we get back in our story, if you listen to our other podcasts, we started way back with Sportsman's Warehouse, and we were just trying to, you know, sell flies. And so we came in and we're able to sell at a pretty good price, and we've just stayed in that lane for the last 30 years. We don't have a lot of overhead. Like I mentioned, it's a family business. It's basically me and my dad. And so we can get the flies from A to B with not a lot in between. And we just try to keep the flies very reasonable and try to make the best we can. We use all good materials. These are all tied on hooks from Japan, and we use Whiting Farms has been a great partner for us. So it's all good stuff. It's not cheap stuff, and we watch it all. It's not coming from, you know, some random person. It's all controlled by us. So I think people will see the value in it, and the price is really good. And so that's what I invite people to do, is just try it, and then you'll know if it's good or not.
Yeah, it's amazing. I think that just looking at this one, you could see, I mean, even without holding it, because it's really high quality, the quality of the fly. I mean, you could tell when flies are not high quality, even online, because it's really obvious when you look at them. But this one, I can tell it just by the way the wing and the hackle. I mean, I feel like that's probably another thing that separates you, right? That you can get these things for $1.50, but they're still high quality flies, which is, I mean, I feel like that's pretty huge, right?
Yep, that's what we're trying to do. That's what we're trying to do. Just make the best fly we can at the best price.
Yep, nice. Okay, good. Well, and I'm just searching around. You have great. We'll put a link out to the website, obviously, here. And I'm looking at the February. You got the tying boxes. So do you guys kind of have throughout the month, like a theme where you're kind of talk about that? Is that something you're doing every month throughout the year?
Yeah, so with our tying boxes, we try to rotate and mix it up a little bit. So February, today's February. We're into February. We're going to be shipping our February boxes here in a couple days. We're going to do an elk hair caddis for the beginner tying box. You just have to do it. If you're going to be a beginner fly tire, that's a great fly to learn to handle elk hair and hackle and get your feet wet and that side of thing. From there, you can tie stimulators and move on to bigger dry flies. So we're doing the elk hair caddis for the beginner, and then we're going to do a Euro nymph called a hot pocket for the intermediate tying box. So how do we come up with all these, and when do we do it? There's not really a system to it. We sit down and we decide, man, this would be a great fly, and we lay it out for the year, and we try to rotate so we're not doing, say, Euro nymphs every single month or dry flies every month. So next month we'll probably do a dry fly in the intermediate box, and we'll probably do a nymph in the beginner box. So we'll rotate between nymphs, streamers, and dry flies, and then throw in some unique stuff here and there. So it's a lot of fun. That's actually the fun part, is sitting down and trying to figure out what flies we're going to tie for the new month.
Yeah, I love this. I think that this is really, I feel like I've even done before, you know, we got the podcast going strong. I can't remember if I mentioned this on the last episode, but I was kind of getting into trying some of this, you know, like what you're doing. Basically, you've refined this and have a suite. I mean, with the videos and everything, you've done exactly what I remember. I was thinking, like, this would be cool. You know what I mean? So I think this is what's awesome about doing this, because, you know, like, instead of me having to do it, I can just send people out to you and say, hey, this is it. And then you have, like you said, you have the video. So this would also be a good thing if somebody wanted to, maybe right now somebody listening already ties flies, but I could see this as a nice little present to somebody who maybe wants to get into it. Like, here's a subscription to Smitty's, right? Or something like that. Do you guys do that? Some sort of like a gift sort of idea?
Yeah, so when you can sign up as a gift for anybody. When you click the subscribe button, it'll ask you, do you want to give this as a gift to somebody? And we have a ton of those. A lot of parents getting it for their kids. That's the beauty of it, is to try to start tying flies and getting the right materials, that's a challenge. It's overwhelming to a lot of people, and trying to figure out what to get, what not to get. And then it gets pretty expensive too. By the time you gather everything, next thing you know, you've dropped $100 on a bunch of bags of feathers that you're not sure you're going to use.
Yeah.
So we've really refined that with our fly box, because you get everything you need to tie at least 25. You're going to have extra. And then that gets you started tying flies right from scratch. And it just shows up and it's all right there. And the video's right there and you can just start tying.
Gotcha. So
I always tell people it's the best way to start tying flies.
Yeah.
And then the intermediate box, you know, you get tying for a while, you might get kind of stale or run out of ideas and you need some inspiration. You need to be challenged or you want to try new materials. That's what the intermediate box is for, is really to keep keep the juices flowing.
And what about the vise, all the tools? Is that something, what's your recommendation there?
You can buy, there's lots of good quality toolkits out there nowadays for $50 to $100. Loon does some, Umpqua does one. There's a number of those. And I just recommend that, you know, just get you a little toolkit that has all the right stuff. With vices, like anything, you have your starter entry level vices. It's really what you want to pay. And I tell people, don't go crazy to start. Just get you a nice little $50 vise or whatever. We all started on those little clunky Thompson vices.
That's right.
That don't hardly work, you know.
They worked well enough, you know.
They worked well enough.
I remember my dad back in the old shop. He used to have these things. It was like homemade stuff. You know, like yeah. Somebody had a pair of pliers or something that was welded, right? You know. But this is good. So okay, so we got the monthly box. We got that covered. Well, let's take it out here real quick. We're going to do our kind of our winner shout out segment. So I mentioned at the start, this is last night we announced the winner, Maurice from New York. He won I think it was close to $6,000 worth of gear, including a trip to our Euro school with Pete Erickson and Brett Bishop here this year. So that was awesome. So shout out to Maurice. And that was a great event. I think we had a bunch of people on that were loving. We gave away some bonus items as well. But for you, what was your, I wanted to ask you this. So have you ever in your life, like, this is the random section, Steve here, but have you ever won anything out there? Do you have any memories there? Have you been lucky in your life?
That is a great question. I'm trying to think. I don't think so. I think I'm the most unlucky person as far as that goes. Yeah. I never win a raffle or, you know, they pull something out of a hat. I never seem to win those things. So no, nothing comes to mind.
Nothing comes to mind. Yeah, that's good. Well, it's funny. I had a little lucky streak. It's funny. I won two things, I think. Man, this is weird. And it's been probably 20 years, but it was somewhere around, you know, the high school range or before or whatever it was. But yeah, I entered like something on the radio and I won a trip to Ontario. I took a friend of mine to, I think it was the largest, maybe second largest mall in the world or whatever. So we did that. And then later that time, I won a trip on the Deschutes, a fully guided rafting trip with like 8 people. Mm-hmm. So those are my two winning, and that's it. But you know, it's pretty interesting because when these people like Maurice last night, I said, all right, we had, I think, 400 people on live and everybody was commenting and having fun. I said, all right. No, we announced the winner and Maurice won. And I was like, well, okay, Maurice, now you got to get back to me. Are you a bot or are you a human? And he replied and he said, man, I couldn't believe it. I had to rewind it and watch it again to see. And he went up and he said he hugged his wife and he celebrated. You know what I mean? I think it's one of those things where I think the giveaway stuff, a lot of times you see it out there. A lot of people don't win because, you know, thousands of people don't win. But, you know, really it's all about the kind of the fun behind it and celebrating, right? Celebrating that. So anyways, I think that's good. So what you're due, I'm sure you're due for it, Steve. That's the cool thing.
I am due for a win. I'm totally due for it. So yeah, sign me up. Yep.
All right, perfect. A couple of other random ones as we get out of here. I probably asked you this before, but again, sports, let's go back into that. What was your game? If you had to play a position, which position was it?
I was a coach's kid. I was the point guard. I was the small kid. I was bringing the ball up the floor. I was the coach on the floor calling the plays. Yep. So that was me. Like you probably, right, Dave? Yep.
That's right. Yeah. And how tall are you?
I'm 5'11".
Okay, yeah, we're about the same height. Yeah, so you're a fairly tall. I guess it depends. NBA, that would be a short point guard, right? But as far as you know, like Isaiah Thomas, what was he? Was he about 5?
He was pretty short, wasn't he? I think he was 6'1".
Oh, he was. Yeah, he was still pretty. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Isaiah, and again, right? One of Coach Knight's probably biggest players of all time. Maybe. Do you think that was the best?
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah.
Yeah. Isaiah, I mean, definitely a great, great point guard. Okay, so that was basketball. Any other, you want to throw out one more sport that you dominated in?
I did not dominate. I played football
Okay.
all growing up. I was a defensive back. I didn't play in high school because, again, I was short and I was rail thin, so I stuck with basketball after that. Other than that, I play a little bit of golf here and there, and my wife's got me playing
Tickle, pickleball. That's
pickleball.
right.
That's come on, so I play a
Pickle.
little. I because I
Yeah.
used to play.
Tennis with like wooden paddles.
Yep. So you don't have to run around as much. You're not chasing the ball around. So I can play it at this age. That's about it.
Yeah, good. Well, just give me one pickleball question here because I think I see pickleball coming up too and where we are. So is that what it is? Because I played tennis as well a little bit, nothing, high level, but I mean, it's kind of just like tennis, only you're not running as much. That's the only difference.
You're on a much smaller court. You got those rackets that are almost like ping pong ball rackets, and your ball is like a wiffle ball, so it
Oh,
doesn't
right.
travel crazy fast, and you can kind of, but you still get a workout. So my wife and I, she's got me playing that.
There you go. Perfect. All right. Well, I think we will leave it there and maybe just give us a couple takeaways from today. We talked about a bunch of patterns. Let's just narrow it down to three. So you mentioned, I'll go back to the start. You mentioned a few at the very start as far as your top patterns. We went through a bunch. We talked about the beadhead, the zebra, the gunslinger, the chubby. If you want to leave people with, like, okay, you need these two or three flies, if you have to get that narrowed down, what would they be?
I would say if you want a nymph that's going to work just about anywhere you're at, use a gunslinger. Check it out. Look at it.
Okay.
Search it online. That's been my. I catch fish with that, honestly, anywhere I go. And if I'm unfamiliar with the water, I'm like, well, I know I can catch something with a gunslinger. So
Okay.
that would be my number one. If you haven't quite ventured into the Euro nymphing game, or you're kind of question it, a pertagone, a quill pertagone is what another one I would recommend that you use.
Yep.
And then from there, a fun one I would try for dry flies, the chernubby or a fatal attractor for something different that maybe you've never tried. That's where I would go.
Yeah, we'll throw the fatal attractor. I think that one, just because it's at least the one I looked at was so bright, I think that would be one definitely want to try. Cool. All right, Steve. Well, I think we'll leave it there. We'll send everybody, like we said, smittysflybox.com if they want to connect with some of these things you have going as far as the boxes. And yeah, man, until we catch you on the next one, I appreciate all your time today and looking forward to keeping this moving.
It's always fun, Dave. I love talking flies and chatting hoops with you as well.
If you want to take this conversation further, you can head over to our private Facebook group right now. That's wetflyswing.com/Facebook. And you can continue on this conversation and ask Steve and others questions in the group there. If you can, check in with the school events at wetflyswing.com/school. And this is the place you can go to find out more about our next event, next giveaways, everything we have going there. And that's it for now. And thanks for stopping by today. I hope you have a great afternoon and look forward to hopefully catching you on the water as we have trips going all year long. And you can find out, like I said, right now, wetflyswing.com/schools to find out what's new and what's coming up.